We are holding on Kofiut Gimel on the base about quarter of the way down, the Amud, the line begins Rava. Kofiut
Gimel
on the base. Okay, so we started talking yesterday about the whole issue of Gezel Agoy, Hafkas Hava'asa, etc., all the various things about are you allowed to unjustly take money from a goy. So we said Gezel, the Gemara that we're dealing with over here is following the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, who says that not. Again, we mentioned yesterday Rabbi Shmuel says maybe yes, and there's a Gemara in Bava Metzia that says maybe yes, but for our purposes, we're taking it as a given that no. The last thing we mentioned was a concept called Hafkas Hava'asa, which means basically you owed him money and now you're avoiding paying it. So that the Gemara had said that Rava had made a distinction that would be mutter. Within that, though, as I mentioned yesterday, there's different opinions about what Hafkas Hava'asa consists of. What about Hafkas means literally withholding, kind of, yeah. So is it only on a halva? Would it also apply to a pikadon, for example? And of course, there's the ever-present thing of Chilul Hashem, as we discussed yesterday, that there's no question if it's going to cause a Chilul Hashem, for sure you're not allowed to. We're talking about in cases where potentially it won't. For example, let's say, you know, you have the father lent you money and now you're claiming to the son, I paid him back, where, you know, he has no way of knowing that it's not true, let's say. Within that, I mean, the Rambam seems to hold that Hafkas Hava'asa is also even to a goy, and then Mefarshim deal with the Rambam's shit on that. Anyway. Onward, now we're going to talk about some other related concepts. Other cases where you have mamun that previously belonged to a goy, what's the din of it? Amar Bibi Bagidol, Amar Rav Shimon Hasida, Gezel Knani Osir, Gezel from a goy, again, Knani is changed around the censor, it's really supposed to be goy, is Osir, Avedose Muteris, but when he loses something, then it's mutter to keep it, you don't have to return. Zele Osir,
do you know who it is?
Yeah. Wait, well, again, we'll talk about the details a little bit, but Gzele Osir, now, the Gezel of him is Osir. Now, yesterday, so we had Rabbi Akiva had brought a proof for that from the case of Evadivri, that, you know, let's steal away the Evadivri from him. Rav Huna is bringing, Rabbi Bagidol, rather, well, Dalmer Rav Huna is going to bring a different pasuk for it. Minayin leGezel HaKnani Shu Osir, Shenema, the pasuk is, V'ochalto es kol ha'amim asher Hashem lekecha meizim loch, it says you should consume all the nations that Hashem is giving you. Now, primarily, that applies to the seven nations of Canaan in context. But it means more broadly, Marsha points out, it can't only mean them, especially because, because then you can't talk. V'ochalter es kala'amim implies that. V'ochalter es kala'amim implies that you're allowed to take what belongs to them. Now, if it's the seven nations, of course, Lo'sachaya kol neshama, of course, they themselves have to be wiped out. Of course, what they have is mutter. So it has to be talking about the other nations as well. However, b'zman shein mesurim biyodcha, since it says asher Hashem alekecha meitzim loch, that Hashem is giving you, it means only when they're subjugated to you. For example, during wartime, b'zman shein mesurim biyodcha, but not when they're not under your control. So at times like that, then gezel goy is awesome. It's only mutter, let's say, for example, during wartime. Interesting thing, the Megala Amukis says on it, the pnimi senyanim,
even if they could goy.
So when we talk about it here, primarily we're talking about goyim who worship Avodah Zarah. We started mentioning yesterday there can be a difference between a ger and a ger toshav in this regard. So, in the context that we were talking about it, Abai had said that can't be, because when it comes to an Eved Ivri, there shouldn't be a difference between a ger and a ger toshav. But as far as many of these other dinim, yes, there is a certain distinction. And you have also, I mean, the Me'iri hold the Mizid, and Me'iri has a famous shitta that most goyim nowadays, even if they don't formally accept the Shevet Mitzvah Minanaya, can be considered in that category of Gevei Tershev, because by and large they do believe in one Eveshter, and by and large, the Me'iri writes this in 1200s. Anyway, I was going to say the Megala Amukis says a very interesting vort about the Pnimis Einyanim. He says, we know Apichsidus, the idea that when Yisrael Oysen Ritzon Shomokim, when the Jewish people are on the right level, then the Hashva from Milamayla comes down primarily to us, and the Goyim and the rest of the world get sort of like the dregs of it, similar to the Gemara in Tainus, for example, that says when Yisrael Oysen Ritzon Shomokim, when the Jewish people are following the Eibishter's will. So then the main Shefa comes to us, and the Goyim get like the leftovers of it, kind of like the Gemara in Tainus, for example, that says that Eretz Yisrael gets the main rainfall, and the rest of the world gets the outflow of it. Bizman Agbolos, as we know from many places in Chassidus, it's the other way around. The main Shefa comes down through the Sitra Akra, through the Klippos. and we kind of get the dregs of it. Therefore, that fits very well with our Gemara over here. Bizman, when Misurim Tachas Yadcha, when the Jewish people are on top of things, so then we're receiving the main chef anyway. They're only getting whatever, you know, sort of whatever is the outflow from us. Therefore, we have the right to take it back. But at a time when the Eibishter Tashpa is coming down primarily through the Klippos, then no, we don't have the right to get.
Okay. We'll create more wealth than they will for us.
This is all, yeah.
That's for sure.
Okay, onward. Come on. Okay. Onward. On the other hand, a goy's lost object is mutter. How do we know that a goy's lost object is mutter? Because the pasuk says you have to return your brother's lost object, implying you only have to return it to a yid, not to a goy. Not only you don't have to, actually, there's Gemara in Sanhedrin that says that's very critical of a person who returns a lost object to a goy. The Gemara uses the Gemara treats it over there as an avera, because effectively such a person, why it is, so there's different explanations. Rashi over there says that the pasuk that the Gemara brings over there means that it amounts to, he's saying that a Jew and a goy are on an equal level. There's no difference between them. And that's not right. There is far too difference between a Jew and a goy. The Rambam puts it differently. The Rambam says the vort is, again, if the guy's...
What difference does it make if there's a difference between Jews and a goy? Gezel is
Gezel. This isn't Gezel. This is Aveda.
Aveda
is different. You know what? Technically, first of all, in those days, most countries, most nations did not have the rule that if there's a lost thing, you have to return it anyway. Finders keepers, losers weepers. It was a chiddush of finders keepers, losers weepers. You never heard it when you were a kid? It was a chiddush of the Torah that you have to return a lost object. So then you have to do that for a year. You don't do that for a good. So one idea is if you return it, again, when there's no circumstances, which we'll talk about in a minute, then it's a problem of you equating Jews and Goyim, you're pretending as if there's no difference between them. And the Rambam puts it differently, that also you'll be mechazik yidei ovid avera. First, this Goy, who's ovid avodah zarah and does other immoral things against the Torah, he's going to use that money, he's going to use those goods for fine. So mele, you can't take it away from him. Gezel ha-goy mutter. But to return it to him, that not.
You been a Muslim?
Wait. Again, according to the Meiri, Muslims and even most Christians according to the Meiri Fakir, the Muslims and most Christians would be considered similar to Geirei Tosha, because basically they believe in one Eibishter and so forth. But yeah, primarily we're talking about over here about Ovid Avodah Zarah. To a lesser extent, we're talking about not. But wait. Anyway. Okay, the question is, fine, you could argue, though, that this only applies if you didn't actually pick up the thing yet. Fine, maybe the pasuk is only implying you don't have to go to the trouble of picking it up and then going and returning it to the goyish owner. How do you know? Maybe the pasuk is implying that once you pick it up, regardless whether it belongs to a Jew or a goy, you do have the obligation to return it. Amravina, no. The pasuk says with Safa. The pasuk says that whatever your brother lost and you found it. Umasasa implies you didn't just find it as in you saw it, you found it as in you picked it up. And even then, the pasuk is implying it's only Aveda Sachicha. However, Tanya, the Pinchas bin Yarim, the Makam Shiesh Chilul Hashem, Afil Aveda Se Asu. When there's a Chilul Hashem involved, then even his Aveda is Asu. So first of all, in many cases, there can be. If a goy lost something in a place where there's lots of Jews, for example, and there's good reason to think that a yid picked it up, then it'll be a Chilul Hashem if he doesn't return it. Aside from all of that, there's two other considerations also, which the Gemara doesn't bring over here. One is Fakir, that's brought in Yerushalmi and in Poskim, that if it will create a Kiddush Hashem to return it, then you should do it for that reason alone. There's a famous story of Shimon and Shatach, who returned a jewel to an Arab, and the Arab praised the God of the Jewish people, so it created a Kiddush Hashem, that sort of thing. Second of all, many Poskim point out, since we talked about before, and we're going to talk about later on in the Gemara, Dina de Machus Adina, if we say, as many Rishonim hold, that Dina de Machus Adina doesn't just mean in connection with taxes and whatnot, but also includes more generally laws. Well, in most civilized countries nowadays, they have laws that if you find something and you can identify the owner, you're obligated to return it. So therefore, on that basis alone, then you'd be obligated to. Now here's another one. Shmuel says, a mistake of a goy is mutter.
Okay.
Meaning, for example, Shmuel once bought from a goy a golden bowl or bucket or whatever, thinking, the goy thought that it was parzala. Now, parzala usually means iron, but many mafarshim, the Marshal and others, say that actually it should be the tzila or something, the pleaser or something. Rashi translates it as copper. So it may have been copper plated with gold, whatever it was exactly. The goy thought that it was copper. Yeah, it's copper. Yeah, bright copper is similar to gold already, but whatever. Yeah. Anyway, the dalad zuzi. So he was selling it for 4 zuzim, where if he had known that it was gold, he would have sold it for a lot more. So that kind of thing is called tos goy, where he himself makes the mistake. The ivla lechad zuzah. And Shmuel not only bought it from him, but also he was mavliya 1 zuz. So what does that mean? Rashi says it means like this. It means on top of that, beside the fact that like this, if the goy had known it was gold, he would have charged much more for it. So like this, the list price is only 4. Rashi explains furthermore that also Shmuel gave him only 3 zuz instead of 4, and the goy didn't notice the difference. And therefore, so that would be considered, that's also part of Toros. That would also be part of Toros goy. Many other Rishonim disagree with that because they make a distinction. Toros goy is mutter, as our Gemara is saying, but only if the goy made the mistake on his own. You're not allowed to mislead him. So, for example, the bowl itself that the goy thought it was copper and really it's gold, fine. You don't have to inform him. You don't have to inform him you're making a mistake. But to actually give him less, that not. To actually mix him up so that he gets 3 and thought he received 4, that according to many Rishonim, you can't do. So they explain, what does it mean? The Ibla Lechad Zuza means faket. It means that Shmuel gave him 5 zuzim instead of 4. What does that accomplish? 2 things. Number one, it makes the goy think afterwards, okay, you know, it's a pity, I made a mistake. You know, I realize afterwards I should have sold it for more. But you know what? Okay, Shmuel also made a mistake. He didn't realize either. He must have also thought that it was copper. That's why he paid me only 4 zuzim. Baharaya, he didn't only pay me 4. He miscounted and gave me 5. So obviously he wasn't paying attention either. So that way, it eliminates the possibility of a chilul Hashem. That's one explanation. Or another explanation
to great tzedek.
No, in other words, I don't understand. Like this, the guy is going to figure to himself like this. Afterwards, he may start thinking, I don't know, I wonder, was that copper? Was it maybe gold? I don't know. I didn't think about it at the time. But you know what? Okay, I mean, I guess it's not like Shmuel knew that it was gold and then deliberately cheated me. He himself must have not been paying attention because, you see, he gave me 5 zuzim where I was only charging 4. So that removes the potential chilul Hashem. That's one explanation. And then the Oruch brings another explanation that it means like this. Shmuel gave him 5. This way, the guy will be happy. He'll go off on his way quickly. Look, I got even more than I expected for it. And not start thinking too hard into, hey, you know, was this maybe gold and I could have gotten more for it.
That's more.
So whatever it is, then so that kind of thing then we're saying is mutter. Again, with some reservations that we'll talk about soon. Another example, by the way, Rav Reuven Margolius has a very interesting explanation of it. According to Rashi, that was saying he gave him only 3, not 4. Rav Reuven Margolius explains like this. Shmuel had reason to suspect that this guy may have stolen the bowl. Because after all, I mean, if it was his own all this time, how did he not know if it was copper or gold? Very likely he stole it. So Shmuel decided to test out the situation. We learned in Gittin that a thief will be willing to let something go for 75% of its value. It's because he doesn't want it to get rid of it. So therefore, Shmuel offered him 75%, 3 zuz instead of 4. When he took it, when he accepted it, then Shmuel realized my suspicions were right after all. He did steal it. So it's a good thing I only paid 3 zuzim for it, and that way I can go find the owner, and he doesn't have to pay.
If he did not, he would have paid.
Then he would have paid 4, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Another example, Rav Kahana Zavan Mikosi Meheva Eshu Chavisa Meheva. Rav Kahana bought 120 barrels from a guy, where the guy thought that there was 100, so the guy miscounted. The ivla lechad zuza, and again he was mavliya 1 zuz. Again, according to the 2 different explanations, either he gave him 1 less or 1 more, as the case may be. Omalei, and he said to him, chazi da'aloch kasamichna. See, realize that I'm relying on you. So what does that mean? Rashi gives 2 explanations. One is that it means Rav Kahana said to the guy, you should know I'm relying on you. I'm not counting them. So in other words, this way he removes any possibility of suspicion. Afterwards, if it turns out that it was more barrels than 100, it's the guy's fault for not counting. Because Rakhana is telling them, I'm not bothering to count it. I'm relying on you to count it. Or Rashi then said,
The
Rambam Paskin is that way. The Rambam Paskin is that way too, by the way. The Rambam says that this that we're saying, Toth goy is mutter, is only when you do something like that. And you tell them, Chazida Allah Kasamichna, that you'll be aware, I'm relying on you. Be aware, I'm relying on you, and therefore, if there's a mistake, it's your problem, not mine.
But if he counts it.
But if you, yeah. Rashi brings the second explanation is the other way around, that the goy says to Rav Kahana, you should know I'm relying on you to count it. But again, according to that second explanation, same idea, then a similar idea, the goy is not bothering to count it himself, therefore, right. Rav Kahana trusts him, therefore, yeah. So therefore, that removes the potential chilul Hashem. Another case, which, by the way, I mean, with this that we're saying that, you know, the goy may be testing you, and then, you know, there is that consideration also. There's a famous story they tell of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky when he was a rav in a little town in Lita in the late 30s, where one time he had received too much change or something at the post office, and Rabbi Yaakov made him go return it. And the postal clerk was very impressed by it. Later on, this guy saved Jews during the Holocaust. So when there's reason to think that he may be testing you, then you got to be extra careful. Yeah. Another case, Ravina Zovan Dikla Huvakusi Lutsalsa. Ravina one time bought a palm tree in partnership with a guy in order to chop it down, in order to chop it into pieces of wood. Amalei l'shameh, so Ravina tells his servant, kodem v'aisi me'ikarei, go get there first and take pieces from near the bottom of the trunk. Kekusi minyana yada. The kusi, as far as he knows, he just knows he's supposed to be getting X number of pieces. He doesn't bother considering whether they're bigger pieces from the bottom of the trunk, smaller pieces from the middle, so go there first in order to get the bigger pieces. Again, the same idea. In other words, Toz goy, he made the mistake of not realizing the difference in the size. That's his problem, not mine.
He should take the bigger pieces.
So therefore, Ravina is telling his servant to go get the bigger pieces. Another case, Rav Ashi have a ka'azal b'ulcha. Rav Ashi one time was going on the road. Chaza shibsha degufna b'padesa. He saw a branch of a grapevine in an orchard, or actually not in an orchard. Many mefarshim say that what it means is it was actually hanging outside the fence of the orchard. It was like hanging over the road or something. Levarim p'padesa. It says on the side here, but Tolibek Keturkad Envy, and there were clusters of grapes hanging on it. Omle the Shameh, so Rav Ashi says to his Mesharis, Zilchazi Idikosi Ninu, I see, go see whose they are. If they belong to a goy, then bring me some. Idi Yisrael Ninu Loy, I see, and if they belong to a Jew, don't bring me any. Shama Hukusi Gavayasa Behadesa, so the goy who was sitting in the orchard, who the sack belonged to, heard this. Omalei, so he says, Kursi Shari, what are you talking about? To take it from a goy is also. I mean, even I know that Gezel goy is also. Omalei, so Ramashi tells him, it's like this, Kursi Shokil Domi. I know that a goy like yourself will take money for it. Yisrael Loi Shokil Domi. A Jew will not take money for it. So what does this mean? There's many, many, many different explanations among the Rishonim of what exactly happened over here. One way of looking at it is Tosfos says that it's not that Rav Ashi to begin with intended to pay for it. He's saying that the guy thought he's planning to steal it. So therefore, Rav Ashi explained, I never intended to steal it. I was always intending to pay for it. The thing is that if it was a Jew and I took it, he wouldn't want to take money for it. Why is that? That Mephoshim have several different explanations. Maybe because they're hanging outside the fence and therefore a Jew realizes they're hefker and is not going to bother charging for them. It's hanging outside the fence.
It's a branch that's hanging over the fence.
The side that's outside, yeah, it can be considered to a certain extent hefker. So a Jew maybe wouldn't take money for that, so therefore there's nothing to pay him. Whereas a guy is going to demand money, so fine. I told my servant to take, and when you come to get the money, I'll pay you. So that's one possibility. They also talk about maybe the possibility is the Yidden knew who Rav Ashi was. They knew he's the God of Adar, he's the leader of the generation. Therefore, none of them are going to have the chutzpah to go and tell him, I want money for this. And Rav Ashi didn't want to take a present for nothing. So Mela, it's a goy doesn't have any particular derech eretz for Rav Ashi more than anybody else. So fine, he'll take and he'll pay like you're supposed to. But a Yid, he doesn't want to take for him for free. And there are other Mephoshim who say that actually Rav Ashi did maybe have in mind to take it originally without pay at all. Either because he held Gezel Goy as Mutter, again there are such opinions, or because he held it's not Gezel because it's on the other side or whatever it is. But once the Goy confronted him, then he had no choice but to sort of backpedal and say that I'm going to
go.
But that at least it prevents the Chilul Hashem, because from the Goy's point of view, as far as he knows, he doesn't know what Rav Ashi was thinking of at first. As far as he knows, Rav Ashi to begin with intended to go. Gufa. Now getting back to what we talked about yesterday at the beginning of the sugya. Amashmo dina demachus adina, that the law of the kingdom is considered valid law according to halacha. So therefore, for example, so you have to follow it. So for example, when they're collecting taxes, you have to pay them. Again, not if the moichus shaman me'elav or shein mekitzva or whatever as we talked about yesterday, but where they're collecting it legitimately. Yeah. Amar Rava. So Rava says, Teja, I can prove it. By the way, there is one other point in this, which is Rabbi Natam mentions, I thought it was in Tosfos around here, but I haven't found it, but someplace or other, Rabbi Natam holds that this concept of dinah d'machlokes dinah, among other things, it requires that it's fair across all the people in the kingdom. If you have a law which is discriminatory against Jews or against some other minority or whatever, then not. Then it can't be considered dinah d'machlokes.
Like here in America.
Yeah. Okay, so Amar Rava, Teja, I can prove this. Dekafli Dikli, because we see the government cuts down palm trees or any kind of tree, the Gashri Gishri, and they use the pieces to build bridges. The Avrin and Aliyah, when we pass over the bridges, if it was a matter of Gezel, if Dina de Malchusa was not Dina, we wouldn't be able to cross those bridges, at least not without paying a toll to the people who the wood was taken from. Why? Who says it's because dinah d'machlokes dinah? Could just be because the owners had yush.
On those pieces,
yeah. Fine, but if it wasn't for the fact that dinah d'machlokes dinah, how are they nis yash? In other words, Rashi says, would it be considered a valid yush? There's no, in order for yush to work, there has to be shinui rishus.
Right.
Here, Rashi says there's no shinur reshus. They're sitting here in reshus rabim. They're still available to everybody. What? No, but they're still sitting out there over the river. Anybody, they're not really in somebody else's reshus. They're just sitting out in the street. There's no shinri maise because they're just pieces of wood like they were before. So yush wouldn't work in that case. Or Tosfos learns a little differently. Heichim Yashi means that if it weren't for dinah d'machlokes dinah, why are they not sitting over there and demanding tolls from everybody who passes by to pay for the wood?
Because it doesn't belong to
them. The reason why they don't is not just Yush then. It's because dinah d'machlokes dinah. The government had every right to take it to begin with.
Right, it belongs to the government.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, the question is, fine, but the people who chop down these trees to take the wood to make the bridges are not exactly following the king orders. Malka almost zulu v'kaplim v'kol bagi, because the king tells them, go chop down trees from all the different valleys, like from all the different, in other words, one tree here, one tree there, or whatever, don't take them all from one small area. The inu azlu v'kaplim v'chad baga, and they go, when they're chopping down trees, they just do a bunch in one place. So that should be considered gezel. The answer is shlucha de malka ke malka. The shliach of the king has the din like the king, as far as that goes. V'loy torach. Well, yes, it means v'loy torach. It means you can't expect him to go to the trouble of going individually around to all the different valleys, to all the different areas of farmland. In other words, just like the king himself, you wouldn't expect to. You can't expect the shliach either. The inu afsid anafshayu. They, the people in the other in the valleys where too much was taken from them. The inu afsid anafshayu. It's the people in this valley where all the trees were chopped down who are forfeiting. They're the ones who made themselves loose. The boyloger, the inkut mikulid bogi, the mishkal dump. Like this. What they should do is. So you have, for example, let's say there's five areas of farmland over here. By rights, the king's officials should be going to all five of them. We need, let's say, 100 trees, so we're going to take 20 trees from each one. Instead, they figure that's too much trouble. They take the whole 100 from one area. What should the people of that area do? They should go summon the people from the other four valleys to Basin and make them pay. If they don't bother, the input mikula bogi, they should gather all those people together and summon them to Beis Din, or mishkal dami, and get money back from them. Because yes, it's true the trees are supposed to come equally from everybody. Fine. Instead, they took 100 of our trees and 0 of yours. So fine, you have to compensate us for the fact that they took trees from us that by rights should have been taken from you. If they don't bother doing that, if they don't bother taking those people to Beis Din to get that money back, that's their problem. But you still can't say that amounts to gezel on behalf of the shliach of the king who goes and collects those trees. Okay. Amar Rava, another din in this connection about dinah d'machlokes dinah. Whoever is found when the king comes, or when the king or his officials or whatever come around to collect taxes on grain and on produce, hello, whoever, just as we say, who comes to collect taxes, Yaakov walks in. Beidori means the greenery. Whoever is there right now, Pura Manasa de Malka, he's the one who has to pay the tax on it on behalf of everybody. Meaning, let's say you have a bunch of people who own grain in this greenery in partnership. So let's say, for example, three of them are already home. The fourth one has his grain still there. He hasn't taken it home yet. And the king's officials find him over there. He's the one who has to lay out the tax on behalf of all four of them. And again, if he's the only one to be found. Again, you can't say... But the point is that the king's official taking it, again, is not considered federal. So it's legal for him to do that. It's legal for him to, according to the law, it was fine to that whoever's stuff is there is the one who is considered to be on the hook for it.
Everything's legal for a king.
Yeah, that was the law. Bahani Mila Shukva. Now, this is only talking about if they're partners. Aval Arisa, but if he's only a sharecropper, Arisusa Hudakomatik, then it's different. He doesn't actually own any of the karka. Therefore, you can't expect him to be paying on behalf of the balabas.
It means he takes out.
He takes out his own portion, meaning he takes out his own arisus. He takes out his own percentage that he's entitled to as an artist, but he doesn't own anything of the karka. Therefore, it would be illegal for the king's official to go and take his share in payment for because he's only an artist. He doesn't own any of the karka. The point is, therefore, if he takes from the artist, that is considered gezel. Yeah, okay. But Amar Rava, another din in this, bar masa mi avet. One person from a town can have a mashkin taken away from him on behalf of another person of the town. Again, you have people have to pay their head tax or whatever. If you have one person is not in town, then the king's official, even if he's a yid, is entitled to go and take a mashkin from somebody else in town to pay for the other guy's taxes. And again, later on, the guy will have to reimburse him. Bahanimila de Barla Arav, a karga de Hayashata. Now, this only applies to the Barla, which is the land tax, and the karga, which is the head tax, de Hayashata of this year. Abel Shata de Cholish, but to be able to take a mashkin from somebody else on behalf of last year's taxes, Yifayis Malka Cholish. Since the king has already been appeased, then it already passed. What does that mean? So Rashi says like this. Again, we talked about yesterday, one possibility with tax collection is the tax collector pays in advance to the king the amount that's expected in taxes for the year. Then he goes around collecting in order to fill up that amount. So the king decided that year the taxes on this area have to be $1 million. So this gabbai, this tax collector goes and advances to the king $1 million, and then he goes around collecting from everybody. If he collects only $1 million, then he's done exactly what he's supposed to. If he collects any more than that, then he's a goslin on that extra amount, as we said yesterday. Since he already paid off to the king everything that he was supposed to for last year, so he paid off last year's $1 million. Okay, so because he already collected $1 million in taxes from everybody else. So now to be able to take a mashkin on behalf of another person who was supposed to pay taxes and didn't, that he doesn't have the permission to do because he's not doing it on behalf of the king anymore. He's doing it on behalf of himself. That's how Rashi learns it. The other Rishonim, the Rosh and others, learn that basically after a year there would be an amnesty on taxes. The king expected to collect taxes only on an annual basis. If you didn't pay them last year, it wasn't like nowadays where they can go after you for years afterwards. In those days it was only that year and then that's it. The king was already moichel on last year's, therefore the gabbai has no the moichel has no right to take anything else. But Amar Rava, how did Dairi Dori b'teichat chod? These people, these goyim, who have animals and they fertilize the ground with them. Dairi dori means they set up pens for the animals. B'seicha tchum, within the tchum to the city. Also likach mehen, you're not allowed to buy anything from them. Now Rashi learns we're talking about animals because since they're within the tchum, some animals that belong to Jews may have joined the ones that belong to them, may have gotten mixed in with them. Therefore, if you're going to buy an animal from it, it might be gezel. Other Rishonim, the Rashba and others, learn that we're talking about buying the dung from them, the fertilizer. That again, the same similar problem you have, that within the tum, the fertilizer may belong to Jews who still expect to be able to take it. And therefore, again, you have a problem of gezel with that. My time, because the animals of the city get mixed in with them. But if they have these pens more than a tchum away from the city, you're allowed to buy from them. Either because in the case, because the animals from the city are not going to be going out there. So there's no problem that there may be Jewish animals that may have been mixed in with them. And as far as the fertilizer, we can assume that the owners are, or even if their animals did go out that far and drop and then and drop dung, we assume they were miyash. Amar Ravina. But if we see that the owner is running after them, then it would be also even outside the tchum, because then we see he wasn't miyayish on it. Machriz Rava. Rava made the following announcement, going back to this matter of Dine Torah involving Jews and Goyim. The Salkin La'elo Denachsin L'tata, those who are going up, meaning from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, and those who are coming down from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, everybody needs to be familiar with the following halacha. Hi, Bar Yisrael, the Yodas Adrus Alekusi. If you have a Jew who knows a piece of Eidos that would benefit a Goy, V'loy Tovu Mineh, and they didn't summon him to court to give this testimony. Those three words, it seems, were added by the censor. Like, right? So Gro takes them out, and so it would mean across the board. A Jew knows Eidos that would benefit a Goy against another Yid. And he goes and testifies in Goyish court against a fellow Jew. We put him in Cheirim. My timer. The Inu Mapti Mamona Pumadachad, because Goyim, when they judge, they will take away money on the basis of one aid, where the base din would only do it on the basis of two aid. So it comes out, you've caused another yid to lose Shaloi Kadin, not according to Din Torah, because according to Din Torah, it would have taken two aid.
It's interesting that they're getting this reason when, in fact, testifying on behalf of going on to Goyish court against a Yid is Asur al-Pi halacha.
A Goy is allowed to take a Jew to a Goyish court. Yeah. We're talking about it's a court case between a Jew and a Goy. They don't have to go to a Jewish court. They're entitled to go to a Goy.
They can go to a Goyish court.
Fine.
But a Jew cannot testify against another Jew in Goyish
court. When it's going to cause him a loss, that's what we're talking about.
It's going to cause him a loss.
That's what we're saying, because he caused him a loss. That's not correct according to halacha.
And if it didn't cause a loss,
then may not
then
be.
Wait.
V'layamoran elachad. First of all, this is only talking about if it's one person. Ava betray loy, but if two people, then not, because two people you've already would be. If it's two Jews who know the Seder, it's fine. That would be enough to be mechay of the Jew in Beis Din as well. So therefore, they're not making him lose anything that he wouldn't have lost in Beis Din either. Okay, Tosfos says you still have the matter of hakas alva. They are still making the Jew lose because he could have evaded it in court, as we said before. But on the other hand, fine. It may be wrong. Them. A Goy is taking a Jew to a Goyish court. Why is it a Chilul Hashem?
But the Jew goes to a Goyish court.
I don't know. The Chilul Hashem is if a Jew takes another Jew to a Goyish court. And in fact, the Mefarshim say that is why the reason why the Gemara doesn't mention that possibility over here is because we don't want to assume that we're talking about Rishoyim. We don't want to assume that we're talking about a Jew that Rosha would take another Jew to a Goyish court. But yeah, a Goy taking a Jew to a Goyish court is, yeah. Anyway, so if it's two Edim, okay, so maybe they did something wrong, Tosfos says, but at least you shouldn't go so far as putting them in Cheirim. Because the fact is, he would have lost the money, he would have been expected to lose that money in Beis Din as well. Furthermore, this that we're saying that it applies to one aid is only if it's the Megister, Rashi says. Rashi has two explanations. One is that it means the village court, where they don't really know the law. But if it's the official, courts of the rulers, inunami chadamoyim sashadule. Then they also, since they know the right way of doing the law, they don't decide cases based on one witness either. They make the person swear a shavua, just like we do in our dinner Torah. Therefore, again, you go and you're causing the guy to have to swear. Fine, that's the same thing he would have had done in Beis Din. Then Rashi says another explanation of Megista, that the word is actually Megusta, which means Goyish judges who don't follow the law at all, who just like they like kangaroo courts kind of. So as opposed to a legitimate court, is that okay? Amar Rav Asher, come on. Amaravashi, Kiya Vena Be Rabhuna, when we were in the yeshiva of Rabhuna, or Hana really it's supposed to be, Iboyalon, we had the question as follows. What if you have an important person, the Samchi Aleika Be Tureh, where even a Be Davar, even an officially duly constituted court would trust him just as much as two people. Matkima Moina Apume, so therefore they would take money from one person and give it to the other based on his word. So therefore, maybe he shouldn't be made. Because again, in Din Torah, there's no difference. Even if the Tzaddik Adur comes to testify on behalf of somebody, you still not Pishnai made him Yachim Dover. Whereas even in a Beit Dover, if a person is important enough and they have reason to know that he's not lying, then they'll accept one person's statement. So therefore, he's causing him a loss. Or maybe since he's an important person, he can't so easily evade testifying. Mela, plain a regular person, a commoner, the guy tells him, you know this Aegis, come testify on my behalf, I'm busy, whatever, you know. But an important person, it's not so easy to get out of that. So take a look.
What about the Nitra, who's a he called an aperture to testify on his behalf. In a Gorshi
court. Good. He's helping the other Jew, yeah. Okay. Ravashi, in this connection, Ravashi says another Jew.
I was under the impression that any time we use a Gorshi court,
when it's two Jews, then yes, it's also to go to a Gorshi court against each other, unless in certain defined cases.
Between a Goy and a Jew, it's still a chiloshim to go to the...
No.
Not at all.
No, as far as I know, apparently not, based on this Gemara. Amar Ravashi, Hai Ba Yisrael Bezabin Le'ara Lo'ev D'Kachav Mametzu De Ba Yisrael Chavre. If a Jew sells land to a guy on the border of a field that belongs to another Yid, V'shamtinen Le'ev, you put him in Chayim. My time. Now, the question is, my time. Why should you put him in Chayim for that? Are you going to say because he violated the Din of Bar Metzra? The Din of Bar Metzra is that if you're selling a field which is adjacent to somebody else's field, that somebody else is supposed to have first right to buy that field. Only if he doesn't come up with the money or whatever, can he sell it to somebody else.
Only in Eretz Yisrael?
No, it's anywhere. But the idea behind it is because it's easier like this. If you have two fields adjacent to each other, he can plow them and whatever, take care of them as one big property. So therefore, it's good for him. It's not any worse for you because you could equally well sell it to him as anybody else. So it's called
one next to the other.
Two houses? I don't know. I think we'll get to in Bava Metzia. We'll get to in a couple of months. Bez Hashem, we'll have an entire sugya about the dinim of Bava Metzia. It talks over there about houses. But yeah. So are you going to say the reason why you put him in Chayrim is because of this dinim of Bava Metzia that he didn't follow? Why? Why? We say over there in that sugya in Bava Metzia that if you bought a guy or you sold to a guy, there is no dinim of Bava Metzia. So what's the problem? And if you bought it from a goy, you can say, Adrab, I'm doing you a favor. You had a neighbor who could cause you trouble, and now you don't. And if you sell to a goy, okay, the whole point of Asisa Yashavatov is that the potential buyer, should say, you know what, I withdraw because you're the neighbor over here, and you should have first precedence. Well, a goy, you can't impose that on him. So what's the problem? The reason is, Ella, Damien, Le, Arbois, Le, Arya, Amitsura. No, the reason is because the other Yid can say to him, now you made a lion crouch by my border. Meaning, in other words, now, you know, the Goyish neighbor can harass him or whatever. Not even harass him. It could be, for example, I mean, there's various dinim involved. There's dinim, which we'll learn in Bava Basra, about what you're allowed to do near your neighbor's property. Goyim don't necessarily follow those laws. So therefore, he may cause trouble just by that. So therefore, Mishantinanle, therefore, we put the Jew who sold to him in Chayrim, until he's willing to accept on himself to pay for any onus, for any trouble that'll be caused by the goy being here. By the way, it says in Shulchan Aruch, one detail on this, this only applies if you could have sold it to a Yid for the same price as to a goy. But if the goy is offering more, then you're not obligated to. Okay.
Money comes first.
No, but you're not obligated to suffer a loss in order to prevent a potential loss for somebody.
I want to not suffer a loss.
For somebody to potentially not.
The Jew will come down in the price.
Why
should he suffer a loss?
Yeah. Okay.
But if the other one suffers a loss, why shouldn't he suffer a loss?
Because it's not necessarily the other guy. It's a possibility he may, but you don't have to suffer a definite. It depends. Okay. Mishnah says, not for moichsin as chamor. Suppose that moichsin took somebody's donkey. But they gave him a different donkey instead. They had Rachmanos in him. You don't need a donkey to carry your stuff. We'll give you another donkey that we took from somebody else. And the Gemara tells us in Bava Metzia that actually it was a somewhat common thing that, like, for example, they would seize a donkey for a certain distance. We need to be able to carry the stuff X amount and then return it. Yeah, so like this, they might have, you know, they might have a whole relay over there. You know, we have this donkey, which we've been using for the last 10 miles. We don't need any more. You take it, and we're going to take you. Not the list in a chsusa v'nasan like chsusa chayera. So similarly, if robbers took somebody's clothes and gave him somebody else's clothes, harei el shaloi, then he can keep it. Because the owner has you. That we'll talk about in the Gemara. Wait. Another din, hamasul min anahar, if somebody saved something from a river, like a river overflowed and somebody picked something out of it, I mean a gaius, or from a troop of armed bandits or soldiers or whatever, I mean actually gaius would mean soldiers, I mean a listin or bandits, im nisyashra bailam harei l'shaloi, if the owner has had yush, then you can keep it. Now, the question is, previously we said we can assume the owner is on Nisiyash. Now we're saying only if we know they were Nisiyash. That's one of the points the Gemara is going to take up. V'chein nechil shel devarim. And the same thing applies to a swarm of bees. Now, bees, the Gemara is going to talk about, we're going to talk about tomorrow, or we'll probably get to it at this rate tomorrow in the Gemara, that bees, midaraisa, a person doesn't own them. The whole concept of owning a swarm of bees is only midrabah. So therefore, so if the owner had yirsh, if the swarm flew away out of the hive someplace else, then and the owner had yirsh of it, then you can keep it. We can believe even a woman or even a katan to say that this swarm of bees came from such and such a place, and then, in other words, that the guy is entitled to take him back. Again, because it's only a kinyan derabanan in the first place. So therefore, it allows edus of isha or katan or whatever. Yeah, we'll talk about it in the Gemara. Also, this person whose bees flew away out of the hive is allowed to walk through somebody's field to save his swarm of bees to get him back. If he does any damage in the field, he's going to have to pay for it. But he's allowed to trespass for that purpose. But he's not allowed to chop down a branch. Let's say you have the bees landed on a branch over there. So what are you going to take them back individually? You cut off the branch and carry the branch home. Now you're not allowed to do amanaslis and esadamim in order to pay, because you're not allowed to steal in order to pay afterwards. No, you could chop down the branch and then pay afterwards. If you did take, so let's say these moichsin gave you somebody else's donkey, if you took it, you return it to the original owner, which means, there's a couple of different approaches that the Rishonim have on this. Rashi's approach is that the Braisa is arguing with the Mishnah. The Mishnah had said you're allowed to keep it, the Braisa is saying you have to return it. There are other Mephoshim who explain that maybe the Braisa is only talking, that maybe the Braisa is only modifying the wording of the Mishnah, not really arguing with it, or maybe the Braisa is talking with Nimishud Asadin. Anyway, Kasava Yush Kedilai Koni, because the Braisa holds that just Yush by itself is not enough. So fine, the Moichus took it, the owner gives up hope of getting it back, that's not enough. So when you received it, that was an Isser. There wasn't yet Shinui Maisa. Now you take it, not Shinui Maisa, Shinui Rishus. Now you take it from the Moichus, there's Shinui Rishus. You can't do that. The point is that just the Yush itself is not enough. You're going to be doing the Shinui Rishus now. You're going to be taking it from the Moichus. You can't do that. That's going to make it that.
Because it's a Yush.
There was Yush, but you need Yush and Shinui Rishus
to
be machna. Like this, there was Yush, there was no Shinui Rishus yet. You're the one who's going to be doing the Shinui Rishus. You can't do that. Earlier in Merubah, the Gemara had a whole discussion about this. You may need Shinui Maisa also, in which case the Gemara discussed over there how that's relevant to these various cases, how there could be Shinui Maisa involved. But yeah.
Muslims took out of Rishus of the elements. Isn't that Shinui Rishus itself?
No, that's the Gazlan himself taking it. It's not Shinui Rishus. Otherwise, every Gazlan would be coined at the moment he takes it. Shinui Rishus means that it goes from the Gazlan to somebody else. okay, again, there's different, there's different other explanations over here, including maybe that we're talking about, maybe we're talking about the Mohsen gave it to you before the owner's Yirush, and then he's going to be in the Siyash after you took it, or whatever, yeah. The Ikadamri, another version, is in Bolahachtu Yachtu Lebaile Mirshayim. If you're going to come and return it, then you should return it to the original owner. My time, and what would that mean? The second version would be that they're not arguing with the Mishnah, but rather saying that the right thing to do would be to return it. My time, Yirush Kedikoni. Yirush by itself is enough to be Koina. But if this person who got that second donkey says, I don't want to have something that's not mine, Master the Bible of Shenim, then the right thing to do to be a chassid would be to return it to the original owner.
You don't get your money back.
I guess you did, yeah. Okay. We said that you're allowed to keep the junkie or whatever it is because the owner had Yush. This is only talking about if the robber who took it was a good. Then we say, in other words, so we have, the first case of the Mishnah was Mipnesha Bailam Misyash and Mehen, that we said that we can assume that the owner is Misyash. But then we had a second case in the Mishnah that said that he saved something from Listim. Then, if the owners had Yush, then Harei L'Shaloi. So that's what Ravashi is saying, that when do we say that if the owner was Misyash is enough, that's only if it was a Listim or Gechavim. But if it was a Jewish listim, then no. Even if we hear him say that he's in the Siyash, that's not considered a valid Yush. Sova, because the owner will think, Lamacham, that kitten lebedine, he's forta yid, eventually I can take him to Beis Din and get it back. Therefore, he doesn't really have Yush. Yeah. On the contrary, it should be, the logic should be the other way around. Akum the daimi begeise, goyim who judge by geise, Rashi translates for gaiva over zroya, like they rely on their own opinion and they force the issue. Loim yayish yisrael, the yid does not give up so easily. Kiven to amri meimer miyash, loim yayish, so he doesn't give up because, in other words, first of all, with a Beis Din, you need two aidim, you need solid evidence, etc. In a goyish court, like we were saying before, sometimes one aid is enough. Sometimes they'll be willing to use hearsay. They'll be willing to even, you know, the judge, whatever. Intimidation is another matter. There's another matter also, which is once they decide what the case is, goyish courts will actually beat the person, let's say, to force them to carry out the judgment. A Beis Din Shel Yisrael will just tell them verbally, you have to go pay it. So because of all of that, he's not with a goyish court, he wouldn't be miyayish. He knows there's a good chance he's going to get it back. Whereas Yisrael, when it comes to a Jewish gazlan, to a Jewish listim, where, as we said before, you're not supposed to take another yid to goyish court. Kiven the Amri Neimer, Jewish courts only say, for example, go give him miyayish. So he gives up just because they tell him, you know, that he's not going to do it.
There's not going to be.
He knows that. They wouldn't beat him. They could put him in cheder, maybe, but fine. If he's a listim, he may not worry about so much about that. So, Eli is not safe. So, no, rather, this statement about the difference between a goyish listim and a Jewish listim is actually talking about So, up until now, we thought we were talking about the reisha, the case where the listim took his clothes and gave him different clothes, for example. So we're saying, adrabe, if it's a Jewish listim, there's more reason to think that the owner was Misyash. We said, the logic is to say that that applies, Rabbi Yosef is saying, is that should apply more to a Jewish listim than to a Goyish one. Because a Goyish one, you know, there's a good chance you'll be able to get it back to him in court, even if you don't have Edim, for example, they can decide the law based on, you know, based on speculation or whatever, where in a din Torah they would never do that, and they'd force the listim, etc. Eli itma sefer. So no, rather this statement goes on the sefer. When we said amatum and akum in a listim, that you said if you save something from soldiers or from robbers, so we said if the owner is on nisyash, then you can keep it. So here's where in nisyash abaylam ein stam aloi. That we said if the owner is on nisyash, then you can keep it. Meaning that if we don't know that they're nisyash not, that would be loshanu ala akum mishum daine begesi. So that only applies to a goyish listim because of the way that they judge, so therefore, in other words, you can't, just because something was stolen from him by a goyish listin, you can't assume that he was misyash, because he thinks there's a good chance he'll be able to go to goyish court and get it back.
And in a Jewish court,
have a list in Yisrael, but if it's a Jewish list, well, you can't take him to a Goyish court. You have to take him to Beis Din, give him to Amri Meimah, since a Beis Din will only say to him to yeah, exactly. Then Miyash, then he gives up because he realizes there's not much chance he's going to get it back. Snan Hossam. We learn in a Mishnah in Masech Kalim, something which is going to bear on our Sovia. Otis Chabala Bayis skins leather that is not leather yet, it's still skin that belongs to a valabos, to someone who's not a leather worker. Machshava matamosan, just thought is enough to make them be makabel truma. So in other words, if the owner of this piece of skin decides, for example, that he's going to use it just as is, without tanning it, without making it into leather, or without cutting it to size or whatever. Let's say he's going to use it, let's say, as a floor mat or whatever. Just thinking about it is enough to make it not tummy, but makabel truma.
Makabel
truma. They shall abdan ein machshava metamosan. But if they belong to a leather worker, then machshava is not enough, because a leather worker usually is going to be selling them. So they, in other words, fine. He's thinking, I'll use it, let's say, as a mat. But if somebody comes to buy it, he'll have to cut it to size and measure. So therefore, his machshava is not enough. He expects that he's going to sell it, that he's going to cut it down to size or whatever and make something out of it.
Marmalacha,
exactly. Shav gazlan ein machshava metamos. Furthermore, if the leather was stolen by a gazlan, then machshava is not metam, is not able to make them be makabel truma, because a gazlan, the owner knows who stole it from him. The definition of a gazlan is he took it from him by force, where he knows who it is. So he's not mityayish because he knows he can get it back. Therefore, the gazlan's machshava is not enough to make it tummy, because the owner expects to get it back. B'shav ganav machshava matamalson, but if a ganav took them, then his machshava is enough to make them makabel truma, because the owner has yush, because he doesn't know who stole it. Reb Shimon and Mechiluf Advarim. Reb Shimon says the other way around. That the Shav Gazlan Machshava Metamosan, Shav Ganav Ein Machshava Metamosan. Lefisha Lenis Yashra Bailam, because the owner doesn't have Yush. Because he says the logic is, Fakir, a Gazlan, since he stole it from you, and you know that he stole it, so you're Messiah, you know, he grabbed it away from you. You know there's not going to be much chance of getting it back from him. A Ganav, once you find who the Ganav is, then you figure, you know, I'll look for him eventually. I'll catch him and I'll bring him to Beis Din. He's too scared to stand in front of me and feel it. So therefore, you know, I have a good chance that he'll also listen to the Beis Din. So Ula now says this whole machloikus, in the case of the Ganav and the Gazlan, is stam. You didn't hear anything. You didn't hear the owner saying anything about Yush. Can you assume he was Nisyash or not? But if you know, if the owner explicitly said I'm Nisyash, doesn't matter Ganav or Gazlan. Either way, he Machshava Matamotzim at that point.
So can you assume someone has made Yush?
That's what they say, right. So the Tanakhama would say you can assume by a Gazlan he's made Yush, or the other way around. The Tanakhama would say by a Ganav you can assume he made Yush, and Rav Shimon would say by a Gazlan you can assume he made Yush. But if he explicitly made Yush, it doesn't matter. Rabba Omer B'Yadur Nami Machlokes. And Rabba says, no, even if you know for sure, even if you actually heard the person say, I'm Miyash, it's still not enough. It would still be the Machlokes.
What is enough?
A Ganav or a Gazlan, as the case may be.
But what would be enough, even if you hear him say, he made Yush, it's not enough. So what would
it's not enough because... just because he said that I'm Yaish, again, he may figure afterwards that I have a chance of getting it back.
So what would be enough? Nothing could be
so
enough.
So nothing could be enough, maybe, yeah. Amalei Abaye L'Rabba, L'Tifla Galei D'Ula, so Abaye says to Rabba, you shouldn't really be arguing with Ula. That's not must nissen kabasei, because our Mishnah here in Bava Kamma says something like what he says. L'Fishal Enisiyash Rabbaye them, because we said in the case we saved something, we said rather in the Reisha, in the case where the Mohsin took the donkey and gave him a different donkey, we said lefishal it's not explicitly in the Mishnah, but it's implied. The Mishnah had said lefishal inisyashra bailim because, or in the Sefer rather, in the Sefer where you save something from the listing. We said the words in the Mishnah were im nisyashra bailim areyad shalai. So the implication is lefishal inisyashra bailim because the owners didn't have yush yet, therefore you can't keep it. But implying that if the owner did have Yush, then you can keep it. tells him, Anan lafisha ein yush labayla masninama. No, we learn the Mishnah differently. We learn that mipneshla nisyashra baila means because the owner's yush is not considered valid. Just because the owner has yush, that's not considered enough to make it that there is now yush, and therefore that the ganav or the goslin can be metame, can make it makabel to b'machshava. Because the owner's yush is not considered a valid yush. Because we say shaloi nisyashra b'ilam, meaning in their heart of hearts, deep down, they're not really nisyash. Even if they verbally say, oi, forget about it. In reality, they have in mind that if they have a chance to bring the guy to Beis Din, they will. Maybe if they actually say, I'm never going to bother taking him to Beis Din, that's different. Classic yush means like, oi, vaylei lechesrin kit. Och and vey, I lost this thing that's worth a lot of money. That doesn't imply, though, that he doesn't still have a chance. Okay. Okay. So now let's look at the earlier part of our mission. And not the moichsin chamorich. We said if the moichsin takes somebody's donkey and then gave him another donkey, we said he's allowed to keep it because we can assume the owner was nisyash. So money, we have to ask, who is this part of the mission alike? Ira bonon kasha gazlan, ira b'shimon kasha ganev. You have the two cases of the Mishnah. You have the two cases of the Mishnah, moichsin and lusim. We're assuming that one of them is a ganav and one of them is a gazlan, or the moichas is a gazlan because he takes it from you by force. The listim is a ganav, we're assuming, because unless we're talking listim bezuyan, as we're going to talk about in a minute, normally a listim would be considered a ganav. Mani, so who is it like? Yirabonon kasha gazlan, yirabshimon kasha ganav. So if you're going to say the Mishnah is like the Rabbanon, then why in the case of a gazlan do we assume the owner is nisyash? If you're going to say it's like Rav Shimon, why in the case of a ganav are we assuming the owner is nisyash? So bishleim la'ula. So it works out okay according to Ula. Dama biyadua kani. He says if you know for sure the owner was nisyash, if he actually said vayle lechesser in kis, then that's good enough. Good. Hachanav biyadua b'divrei hakol. Fine. So the Mishnah can be talking about you actually know that the previous owner of this donkey said vayle lechesser in kis, and therefore you're good. El l'rabo dama biyadua nami machlokes. According to Rabbah, Homani, then who is the Mishnah like? Lo Rabbanan and Lo Rav Shimon.
According to
Rabbah, exactly, it's not enough. So why would you be allowed to keep this ducky? Right. The reason is, the listim mizuyan for Rav Shimon. Because we're not just talking about a listim, we're not just talking about stam a listim, we're talking listim mizuyan, where he's armed. That's a gazlan. A regular listim is more like a ganav. He does it stealthily. A listim mizuyan is he has a weapon. Listim means a robber. But it means, in other words,
highway robber.
Yeah, but in other words, a listim, yeah, that's the thing. A plain old listim that's not mizuyan is more like a pickpocket or something.
Right.
Listim mizuyan would be a muggle. Yeah, it would be like a highwayman or whatever. Yeah. Okay, so then Rav Shimon. So then our mission would be like Rav Shimon. Okay, the question is, I know gazlan. Fine, that it amounts to the same thing as gazlan. We already said a moichis, so we established before that a moichis, an illegal moichis, is considered a gazlan. So a listim, then you also say it as a gazlan. What's the difference? Ihachi, if so, Haino Gazlan.
If so, meaning
if you're going to explain that the listim is a listim mizuyan, then he's a gazlan, the moichus is also a gazlan, what's the difference? The answer is, Tere Gavni Gazlan, fine, two different kinds of gazlan. There's one who pretends that he's doing it legally, namely a moichus, and then there's a kind who makes no pretense of it being, who makes no pretense of it being legal, the listim. Yeah, that's what we're saying. Okay, Toshma, come, let's try to bring a proof from another case. We had it before in Merubah. Haganav va'gazlan va'anas, hekdesh and hekdesh, or trumoth and trumor, maseres and maiser. A ganav or a gazlan or an anas. An anas means, the Rashi says, that he does pay for it, but he takes it by force, but then he pays for it. So if they take truma from what they stole, the truma is valid truma, the maiser is the hekdesh is valid hekdesh, etc. Again, mani, again, who is this like? Irabonon kasha gazlan, irab shimon kasha ganav. Again, we mentioned ganav and gazlan, so that doesn't work according to either Rav Shimon or the Rabbanan. So again, bishleim ala ula dama biyadua kani hachanami biyadua v'divrei hakol. Again, ula can say we're talking about where we know the owner was nisyash. Ela l'rabba dama biyadua na'i machlai. Because again, according to Rabba, if we say it doesn't matter whether he said yish or not, either way it doesn't help. Halmani, then who is it like? Lo Rabbanan v'lo Rav Shimon. And again, the answer is hachanami b'listin nizuya. And again, the gazlan over here doesn't just mean a pickpocket. Right. It means a highwayman v'Rav Shimon. And therefore, it's a coincidence of Shimon. Again, he holds behind gazlan. The Rav Shimon who holds that a gazlan you're miyayish mistake.
But a gazlan
is sweet. A gazlan is a gazlan. He holds behind a gazlan. Fine, isn't the same thing as gazlan? And again, the same thing today. Gavni gazlan. The Ibayesema, or yet another possibility. You don't need to say, so far we've been talking about you have the Rabbanan and Shimon. We can answer a whole different answer for our Mishnah, for the case of the Truma and Meiser. We can say a different answer, Hamas Nisa Rebbe, that our Mishnah goes like a Rebbe, a third opinion. To the Tanya, as we learn in a Bright, the Rebbe and a Ganav to Gazlan. Rebbe says that a Ganav is like a Gazlan. The Kaimalon to Gazlan and Shimon. And we know the Gemara explains further down on the Amud that it means that the Gemara is going to show how we know that Rebbe means to say that a ganav is that just like Rav Shimon holds a gazlan is mistama yumiyash, a ganav is the same thing Rebbe holds. Therefore, there you go then. When a ganav or a gazlan, so we don't have to say list in Missouri anymore. A ganav can be a pickpocket or whatever. A gazlan can be a ganav can be whatever, Missouri or not. Either way, Rebbe would hold in either case the mistama yumiyash. Therefore, that's what we're saying. The Merchim or the Listim gave you another donkey or another piece of clothing. You can keep it. Okay. I guess so. Okay.